This is episode 88 with Janice Cantieri. Just want to say thank you for all of you who sent emails. I really, really appreciate it. Once again, it's tyoroxin at uydmag.com. So tyoroxin at uydmag.com. And I just want to ask that you guys continue to subscribe and leave reviews. Your reviews are really helping with the charts. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited about today's guest. He's actually going to an island that's going to be non-existent in the next 50 years. So she's doing an amazing thing to go cover the culture and preserve as much as she can while also interviewing some of the current inhabitants. So enjoy the episode, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from you.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tyo Roxin.
Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Janice Cantieri, and she is a Fulbright scholar for National Geographic covering the people of Kiribati, an island that will completely disappear in the next 50 years because of global warming. She's currently in Fiji now, and she's talking to the people who are from Kiribati but were forced to leave by the British in the 1940s. So today we're going to be talking about her journey there and what she plans to do over the next 9 months. And basically what she's learned through travel and how she hopes to make an impact in society. Welcome to the show, Janice.
Hello.
So I talked a little bit about you there. So can you tell us more about yourself, how you've got into this, how you discovered Kiribati, and then, you know, what's your hope for this this whole mission that you hope is?
Yeah, sure. So I actually heard about Kiribati when I was taking a class in my junior year at Washington University, and the class was an anthropology class focused on global energy and its implications in the developing world. And one of my classmates had actually gone to the International Conference for Climate Change. It's the COP conference. They have a conference every year for global leaders, and he mentioned the Kiribati president giving a really powerful speech and crying because his country will be underwater in the next however many years. Some say 20 years, some say 50 years. It will be uninhabitable probably in 50 years, but they're already facing changes right now. And so I heard about this country, and I wanted to find a way to get there and hear how it was affecting the daily lives of people there, because a lot of the reporting that was done was mostly focused on the fact that this is an entire country going underwater, and it was focused on global leadership and politics and all that, but not really how it's affecting people's daily lives. And so I went in the summer of 2014 on a reporting grant, and I was also doing anthropological research while I was there. Wow. And interviewed families on how it was affecting their daily life. And for the people in Kiribati, they mostly live subsistence lifestyles. So they go out and fish during the day, and then they supplement their diet with coconut, breadfruit, other tropical plants that grow on the islands. And then because it's an island, they have a fresh water lens that's a shallow water. It's kind of like an aquifer, like right underneath the surface of the sand. And the challenges that they're facing right now are the fact that all their gardens are being washed away, the coconut trees are dying because they're covered in salt water, and then their water lens is becoming increasingly submerged with salt water, sea life, and there's all sorts of diseases related to that. So I went there last summer, and while I was there, I was inspired to apply for the National Geographic project, and that's what I'm currently working on.
And that's so cool. I mean, I always love it when people tell me that they saw something, they saw a problem, and they just decided to do something about it. Because not a lot of people do, and I, and I commend you for doing that. But so now you're in Fiji. So why Fiji? Why is Fiji particularly important to Kiribati, for example?
Yeah, so the first time I was doing my research, I was mostly based in Kiribati. But this time, my project is, for the next 9 months, I'm focusing on displacement from Kiribati to Fiji and throughout the Pacific. So there are a lot of people and a lot of families that have moved already from Kiribati to Fiji, and they've already moved to New Zealand or Australia and some to the United States. And I'm interested in talking to those people and how they see their identity, how they see their culture and community separated from the islands and separated from where they grew up or where their heritage is. Yeah. And so I'm interviewing families here and then going to a couple different islands as well.
And you're going to do this with audio, video, written, all sorts of things, right?
Yep.
Have you found, have you heard a certain common thread when you ask them? Because that's a big deal. You're losing your home, right? It's a big deal. Like, your culture, history, everything is gone. You know, you're going to have kids coming in there, and they're not going to be able to, you know or visit where your, you know, their father and grandparents used to live. How are the people over there taking this impending loss?
Yeah, so I actually, I just landed on, well, it would be Wednesday here, so Tuesday of last week. So I'm just getting started, but from the, like, two people I've talked with so far, I think they still feel a very strong connection to Kiribati, but they're growing up here, and they're in Fiji, so they also consider themselves Fijian.
Gotcha.
So that's my sense from right now, but I can't say yet because I haven't talked to enough people yet, but no, that starts on Monday.
That's fair. Now, what are you most excited about and what are you most nervous about?
Yeah, I'm most excited to go back to Kiribati next week. I'm going on Monday to see my host family and the people I lived with last summer, because I haven't seen them in a year and communication is like nearly impossible, so I haven't really been able to keep up with them, so it'll be good to go back. Really excited for that, and I'm nervous for, so part of my project is following current families that have been displaced due to climate change and sea level rise, but the second part of it is actually following the Banabin people and their displacement from Kiribati to Fiji in 1945 by the British Phosphate Commission. So there's two groups of Kiribati people that have been displaced because of factors that are out of their control. And one occurred almost 70 years ago. And I'll be documenting the anniversary, the 70-year anniversary of this in December. But after that, I'm going to Banaba. And I'm very nervous just because there's no communication there at all.
Oh, my gosh.
like in order to make a phone call, you actually have to go on a 3-day boat journey to leave.
Oh, wow.
You have to leave the island. So I won't leave the island, but there's just like, there's nothing. So I will be like scheduling my articles and posting them like from a month before. And then when I get back, I'll tell the story, but I will have no communication with anything.
That's going to be such an experience. I can't even imagine. Because I'm still attached to my cell phone, right? And I do everything on my you know, iPad or phone, just to, when I'm managing content, because I, you know, like you do, it's a lot of content. And I'm like, 3 days, I'm not getting the schedule. So you're going to have to learn a lot about, you're going to have to learn a lot about your people, because you're going to be interacting with them the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm a little nervous for that, just because I'll be going on my own, but my language skills in the Kiribati language are not the best. So I'm hoping that it won't be. I mean, it hasn't been an issue so far, but I hope by that point I'll have the language down a little bit better, so that'll help.
What language do they speak at Kiribati?
They have an indigenous language. It's called Gilbertese. And it's a lot of K's and T's and interesting sounds that don't really match what the letters say. But I picked up a little bit of it last summer, and it's pretty straightforward. So I'm hoping I can get it, but I'm not the best with languages, so I'll try.
Speaking of languages, when did you language is obviously one of the ways people connect when they travel, but you started traveling early, I think, right? I think you, when was that? I was reading your article. When did you start traveling?
Yeah, so I first left the country when I was 12. I went with my mom, and we went to Zone 18 of Guatemala City. And we were working with orphanages there, and we were, like, painting them and kind of just hanging out with people there. And I was just, like, I had no idea what I was getting into. I was just like, oh, I'm going to go to Guatemala. Like, I had no clue. Right. And we just happened to be going to the most violent and most impoverished area in Guatemala City. And so that was a big shock for me as a 12-year-old. But it was probably the most influential trip that I've taken. It was really great. The people were wonderful and just, like, so happy. And I was just shocked because I thought that you'd have to have a nice house. Like, at the time, this is what I thought. You'd have to have a nice house and you'd have to, like, have material comfort in order to be happy. And that was, like, a big change for me to, like, realize that that's not the case, because I was just welcomed unquestionably by everyone I met. It was really amazing. And I was, like, a 12-year-old who didn't speak any Spanish, so.
So it sounds like it opened your mind, gave you a certain perspective, and you got to see the world from a different angle, because you said, here are people who didn't have much, but found a way to be happy still, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Man, okay. And it's something I often say when I talk to guests on the show, because that's why I fell in love with travel, is just because I just realized there was so much the world had to offer, and many things I had no idea about. And I just wanted to see, ways I could learn and from others and ways I could, possibly add value to other people's lives. But I felt like I couldn't do that by staying, in my wherever I was at the time. So
yeah.
Okay, so 12 years old, you got your first taste of travel, and then when did you start intentionally traveling?
I then went on another trip to Panama, and I was working with malnourished children. That was my junior year in high school. That was still with a group. It wasn't, like, on my own. But I still felt that doing kind of service trips was a little conflicting for me, just because I felt like the minute we left, then the kids were still going back to the, like, it wasn't sustainable. So we were there, we were helping the kids, and then once we left, it would go back to kind of the same situation that they were in beforehand. And it wasn't related to the people there at all with their kids. It was just a situational thing with the state of the communities we were working with. There was nothing to help bring them out of the poverty that they were in. And so I went, my freshman year in college, I went on an internship with, it's called Social Entrepreneur Corps. Mm-hmm. And it was founded by Greg Van Kirk. And he was a former investment banker and then started this for-profit company. It might be a for-profit company. I'm a little rusty on what it actually is. But Basically brings students to the developing world to help people there themselves start businesses. And so I was working with women there on, we were going on campaigns through the villages to sell reading glasses, solar powered lights and cell phone chargers, and wood burning stoves, and different products that would add value to life in a village. Mm-hmm. And then the women earned all the profit from those sales. So those women then were able to provide education for their children. They were able to go back to school themselves and further advance themselves and their family. And then it would create a next generation of kids that were able to kind of step out of that level of poverty, and they were raising them up in a way. And I didn't have any business skills. I didn't really have much to offer, but I gained a lot out of it just from interacting with the people and seeing how much passion they had. And it was really inspiring. And it felt like once I left that even though I didn't really have much to offer, I still felt better about it just because it was sustainable and it was a lasting change, and offering, the program was offering education opportunity instead of just offering money, or instead of just coming and, you know, leaving and then the situation returned to the same thing. So
you felt like there was hope, like beyond their help.
Yeah. Huh.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was like a totally different experience with travel that I had. I loved that trip. And then I continued traveling after that. I went on a couple like vacation trips, and then which is like a little different, obviously. And then my junior year, I lived in Europe for a semester. I lived in Dublin, traveled
Ireland.
Around Europe. Yeah, I loved it. It was great. And then I was home for a week and went to Kiribati for that summer. And then in December of that year, I lived in the rainforest in Peru and was tracking monkeys, which is totally different, but I was taking a course on monkey training. So that was awesome. Not monkey training, monkey tracking.
Monkey tracking.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm back here.
Wow. So I'm just trying to... First of all, you're a rock star. Amazing. I love that you did that. But like, you just from an early age, you just discovered that your eyes were open, your mind was open. You saw what happened in, I was in Guatemala,
Yeah.
And then you started just taking all these trips. And the reason I was asking you to tell the story is because a lot of people travel sometimes, but it's not a personal thing for a lot of people, because sometimes people don't choose to do something about it. But you chose to do something about it. Did you always want to be an anthropologist. I always mess up that word. Did you always want to be an anthropologist?
No, actually, I think a big reason why I chose to do something about what I saw, or like became interested in sharing what I saw, is because my mom was a huge influence after I got back. Mm. And she told me I should tell my friends about what I saw, because they had never been exposed to something like that. Or she told me, like, oh, you can show it to, like, different sports clubs. I started a collection for, like, soccer supplies and stuff, because, like, I was playing soccer, but the kids didn't have shoes, and they didn't have, like good quality, like, soccer balls or anything. So I started a collection with my soccer club, and then I started telling them about the kids there and how, like, they were so good, but they were playing with, like, nothing. And so I think she was a big influence on bringing back the experience of travel to the United States. And I think that is something that I like saw as a value for travel as well, because I've gained a lot from just having conversations with my friends when I come back, and conversations with people, because it opens their eyes as well, even if they weren't able to go on the same experience, or even if they have traveled, mm-hmm. but haven't like taken the time to think about what they experienced. And I think reflecting on it is one of the biggest values in traveling.
Love it. We're close in age. We're in our early 20s. I guess I'm in my mid 20s. It's right in the middle. Right in the middle, 25. But we're the next set of global leaders. Some of us already are. And a lot of these global issues are things we need to pay attention to. What do you think are the most important things? And I love that you're doing what you're doing. That's why when our mutual friend, told me about you, I was like, you know, that's perfect, because I think we need to raise awareness about all these things, because I think it's very easy for many of us in the comfort of wherever we are to look like, it's not going to affect us, that's not going to affect us. But, I mean, you're going to a place where a whole culture is going to be wiped out, you know, and there are many of these type of issues out there. So what do you think? For the millennial listening, or anyone really listening now, thinking, how can I make an impact? You know, what can I do? I'm just somewhere here. I don't even know what to do or what's happening in the world. What would you tell that person?
Yeah. I guess, well, for me, I honestly just, like, I had interest in human rights, development, and, like, finding ways to make more opportunities for those living in the developing world that want to break out of wherever they are.
Right.
But then I started taking classes in climate change, and I saw the overlap there. Mm. And a lot of the countries that are affected by climate change the most are those in the developing world where people are subsistence farmers or people rely on the weather for their daily life, their subsistence. So I kind of just like became interested in it and then heard about a certain country that was affected and I decided to go. And so I guess my advice would be to, if you have even a vague interest in a certain topic that matters to you, and if you hear about a place where that's being affected, just go. Somehow find the money and find the time to do it, and you'll learn a lot just from being there. Instead of just reading about it, it's the best to just go and experience it, because you'll learn the most from being there. And I could have decided that I was unqualified or
too young,
not prepared. Yeah, exactly. And like, I had no idea anything about the Pacific. I'd never taken a class on it. I didn't read anything about it, and I didn't really know that much about what I was getting into at all, but I kind of just went, and then I learned. Yeah. And then I learned a lot after the fact from reading things about it and doing research for a whole year writing my thesis, but it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't just gone. So I guess the best advice I have would be to just choose something and go for it, and then you can figure out what your passion is once you're there, because you'll most likely be inspired while you're there.
Absolutely. And you know, when you were saying that, I couldn't help but think of Shia LaBeouf, and it was like, just do it! So that, I think that's such great advice. You just have to do it. And I think a lot of times we are our own, we just our own biggest, we're our own worst enemies, and we say, I can't do anything. You know, write a blog, start something, raise awareness, start a campaign, and you never know who you could reach. I want to touch on a few things before we wrap up here, but she's going to be, first of all, a contributor to UID Media. So by the time this comes up on Tuesday, she would have posted a first article, and you get to learn more about her stories and her journeys. So you can get to reach out to her. And she's also going to be journaling when she can get access about her trip. So that'll all be available on UID Media and National Geographic, right? So you're working with National Geographic, and you're going to be posting content for them as well. Would that be available after the 9 months or during the 9 months?
During the 9 months, okay. Actually, every week. So I'll have an article coming out next week once I have my interviews. But it's a weekly post on the National Geographic website.
All right. So, please feel free to share the links with me, and I'll share it out with them so we can follow you. Yeah, on UID and where you talk about the personal side, and then on National Geographic where you're talking about the whole outlay of everything there. But the last two questions I wanted to ask you were, how do you connect with people when you travel? Because this is one of the biggest questions people ask. I don't know anybody. I don't know the language. You say you don't know the language. And how do you deal with the family dynamic? Because you're going to be away from family and friends for 9 months.
Yeah. So first question, I guess, the way I connect with people is, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes, like, you're alone in a country and you don't really know anyone. And it's especially hard if you're living on your own. I have been fortunate when I'm in the Pacific. I've always lived with families, so I'm already introduced to a family, and they introduce me to the rest of the village. But it's hard with a language barrier and, things like that. But the best thing you can do is, like, smile. That helps a lot, having a positive attitude. Smile. And being open to everything and saying yes to everything.
Yes.
and just participating instead of, wishing it was, like, how you live in the States, because it's obviously different, and it's best to just kind of go with it. And that always works for me. And then, dealing with the 9 months away, I've never been away for that long, but most of my friends I have when I have been abroad, it's always the same when I come back. And I am actually this year going to write letters to people instead of trying to communicate on the internet, because last year it took me like 45 minutes to send an email to my mom to tell her that I'd gotten there. So she didn't know for like a week and a half that I was still alive.
Wow.
Because it was not sending. So I was like, oh, well, I guess she's going to have to just trust that I'm okay.
I can't even imagine being your mom. I would be so nervous.
Man. So I'm going to try that. Try postcards. But mostly I'm just going to be here and live here and I know that my friends will be the same when I get back, even though it is a long time.
Yes. No, that's great. And we can find you. I don't know if you have the URL, but you can send a shirt to me. I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. But, you know, for a last word of advice, I always ask my guests how they use their difference to make a difference, because that's the mission statement of the podcast, but and the platform. So how do you use your difference to make a difference, Janice?
Yeah, I guess
it's a tough question.
It is a hard question, yeah. But I would say that I have been extremely fortunate to have been able to travel so many places. Mm-hmm. And I am so lucky to have parents that have supported a lot of the travels and also just the opportunity to go on trips. And I know a lot of people that want to travel and don't have the finances or they don't have a way to do it. And so what I want to do with my difference is be a voice for them to experience a different culture or experience, you know, connection with people around the world, even if they can't get there themselves, even though I want them to be able to get there themselves. I think it's really important to share the experiences that I have and, like, the interactions I have with other people, because we're all connected. And I honestly, everywhere I've traveled, I've found a family. Not literally a family, but I've found connection with people that makes it feel like I have a family in, like, I don't know, a bunch of different continents, like all four hemispheres. Like, I have people around the world, and it's just like, it's amazing. And it's just like, it's so cool to be able to say that I have friends in all these different countries. And it's like, I think a lot of people are afraid of difference, but that's really what connects us, I think. I don't know. Yeah.
No, I think that's perfect. That you're being a voice. Yeah, you're being a voice for a lot of the voiceless. You're giving people a chance to get to know about the world, and by sharing your story, you're giving people the confidence to do theirs. That's incredibly, easy as that was to say, that's incredibly hard to do. Not many people are able to be just bear down and just share the stories, and you're opening this lens and giving people a new perspective to look at the world, which is why I called you a superhero yesterday, and I still think you are. It's been great talking to you here, but I want to wish you best of luck. I will be, obviously, well, I'll be keeping in touch with you when you can throughout the 9 months, but if we're going to do another podcast when you come back, so we can catch up and you can tell us all about what you've learned, some of the experiences you had. You know, the good and the bad, hopefully more good, you know, and not very many bad, not any bad at all, but just, you know, just talk about how it was and, how you feeling after you do that.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much
for having me on the show.
Pleasure is mine.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.